Hello and welcome to Two Peds in a Pod, the Paediatric Medical Education Podcast. Remember, you can hear our entire back catalogue of episodes on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and of course, our SoundCloud. So please tell your colleagues and friends and hit that subscribe button. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Episode 81, Priority Setting in Paediatric Emergency Research. Hello and a very warm welcome back to Two Peds in a Pod, the Paediatric Medical Education Podcast, now in association with the lovely people at Peruki. My name's Ian Lewins. I'm a consultant in paediatric emergency medicine based in Derby. And it's my very great pleasure to be joined today by Dr. Charlotte Sloan, who is a paediatric research fellow based in Belfast. Good afternoon, Charlotte. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. The weather is, as always in Derby, it's beautifully sunny outside. It looks fairly nice with you in Belfast, which
you know what? Yeah, it's our one good day a year.
So this is summer for Belfast. Excellent.
Yeah, definitely.
So Two Peds has now joined up with the team at Peruki. And for those who don't know, Peruki is the Paediatric Emergency Research across the UK and Ireland group. The Peruki big project at the moment that you've been working on, Charlotte, is research about research, in a way. It's trying to work out what are the things that we want to know. So how did you get involved in this project?
So I got involved through I'm currently doing the research fellowship, as you said, in Belfast. And as part of that, I'm undertaking a master's in experimental medicine at Queen's University. And my project this year is to help lead the prioritization study for Peruki, and that's come through Peruki and my supervisor Tom Waterfield, who has obviously been part of the executive committee for Peruki. So I got involved directly through that, and then I've taken on the role of the priority setting partnership coordinator and the information specialist as well for that.
Perfect. So in terms of what do we mean when we talk about priority setting? Can you explain a bit about that to us?
Yeah, so it was all quite new to me as well at the beginning of this process. So I've definitely had to do a lot of research into what is research priority setting. And lots of places call it slightly different names, but it's basically coming up with a list of priorities that for a specific topic or area. And trying to get a large group of people kind of choosing these. And over time, these have developed. So I've done a previous literature search for pediatric emergency medicine priority settings. And the first one was actually in America in 1999. And since then, it's gone on and kind of developed a bit more. But they're all very unique and very different and all using slightly different methodologies. So over time, they've become a bit more structured frameworks to try and make them a bit more standardized. And most importantly, to try and get the inclusion of children, young people, families, and kind of the end users that are most affected by the research that we do and getting them involved.
Yeah, so that's a really important point, isn't it? It's not just researchers going, we think this is the important questions that we need to answer. It's also getting the people who are going to use our services to go, what's important to you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there seems to be a lot of the time a disconnect on what healthcare professionals want to research and what is most important to kind of families and children. And it's very interesting. I think this whole process has been quite enlightening to learn kind of that we do become quite focused and narrowed down in the, you know, this is the best treatment for this specific condition, whereas families care a lot more about the environment that they're cared for and, you know, how they are cared for and how people talk to them. And sometimes those can be slightly less focused on within research. So it has been interesting to kind of start to get some of those opinions gathered.
And of course, Peruki have done this before, haven't they? This is they did 2015, something like that?
Yeah, exactly, 2015. It was Hartshorne, Stuart Hartshorne et al. Was the paper published in 2015, and so Perugihit was established in 2012. And what they quickly learnt was that other research networks thrived after setting these priority setting partnerships, because it what it really helps research kind of collaboratives do is focus your finite healthcare resources onto specific topics. And then particularly with large research collaboratives where you've got lots of different centres, it helps avoid duplication of work and people going down different, slightly different avenues. So they quickly learned that they needed to do a research prioritisation. And then they did a fantastic study, and they used a modified Delphi survey and had two online surveys of the Perugi membership. And the first one, they were able to collect lots of questions from healthcare professionals. And then again, they went to a second survey, which allowed kind of ranking of the research priorities, depending on what was most important to the Perugi membership at that time. And the list that came out of it was fantastic. So it's gone on to do really high quality studies. So the PTKI and children's study, the FISH study about feasibility of fluid management for children who are septic, and then the Eclipse study actually was the 21st priority, I think, on the list. So it's been able to come up with really big studies that have helped shape national guidelines for PEM and help improve clinical care. So it's helpful in just directing people to, these are something that we should focus on, and let's think about how we could specifically design a trial for that.
Okay, so with that in mind, what have you done so far? And the James Lind Alliance are not a 1970s sort of prog rock band, but what have you done? And tell me about the JLA.
Yeah, I'll maybe start with who the JLA are. So the James Lind Alliance, they're a non-profit organisation that are run through the National Institute for Health and Care Research. And their main focus is running research prioritisations, just one after the other. But they do that by including patients and the public member, not just in the surveys themselves, but within the steering group. They have a fundamental role in kind of designing the research prioritization and making sure that there's equal weighting to the voices that come through the surveys. Nice. So they've been doing that since, I think, 2004, and have run hundreds and hundreds of research prioritizations. So the reason Perugi wanted to work with them is they have an established methodology, and they have lots of experience of making sure that they include those voices which had been kind of missed from the original study that Perugi had done. So I've got involved with kind of setting it all up. So it's been a journey of learning about the whole process. So far what we have done, so we established a steering group, and we have 8 doctors, 6 nurses, 1 paramedic, 1 academic researcher, and 4 parents. And we meet every month as a steering group to kind of further the process of the prioritization. And then we wanted to originally have children and young people as part of the steering group. And we realized it wasn't quite feasible with school hours and work hours being the same. So we had to really think about how else we could get them included. And we had a fantastic young persons advisory group from Sunderland who were really eager to take part. So they've been able to meet up with us in evenings and help us with kind of survey design and how to reword things and trying to make things into kind of plain English, which a lot of us have lost the skill of speaking in plain, simple language. And they've been fantastic at just making sure that you think it through and thinking about other people. So we co-designed the first research survey with them, and it was designed using REDCap.
Yep.
And we wanted to make it accessible for all members. So we needed to represent healthcare professionals, children and young people, parents and carers, and then adolescents who, or not adolescents, adults who remembered experience of PEM care as children. So we were able to make it work with a lot of logistics through Red Cap and doing lots of coding on the survey to make it work. But you were able to use one online survey and depending on your background, filter it through. And the young people who helped design the survey had suggested doing an easy read version and an advanced read version, which I think was really, really interesting and allowed people to pick what they felt was best for them. And something that I found quite interesting was that quite a lot of healthcare professionals picked the easy read version.
Absolutely.
So I found that quite comical as we went along. And actually some of the younger people were picking the advanced read because they felt it was more suited for them. So the best laid plans don't often work out how you think that they might. So that was open. The survey was open for 8 weeks from February to March. And we had 305 completed responses from that. And quite a large proportion were healthcare professionals. I think it was 216. But we got 16 children and young people. And I think there was 69 parents and carers and 6 adults with experience of PEM care. And we'd done a pilot study prior to that coming out. So we'd actually had a lot more children take part in the pilot study. So we had 33 children take part in that. So all of those results, all the questions that were gathered through that survey have now been put together. And we have 654 questions in total. It's quite a lot. So from those questions, the next stage was processing them to decide were all of them relevant, were any of them considered out of scope, as the steering group had agreed a protocol of what would be classed as in scope. So all emergency care for children and young people, irrespective of the setting, was deemed included. So we had about 148 questions that were removed because they were out of scope. And then the rest of the questions had to be, quite a lot were along similar themes. So there's quite a lot of questions about asthma care. So we've kind of sat and grouped them all together depending on their question. And that brought us down to 70 summary questions. And that's the process we're at the moment now, so that each of the 70 questions has to go through evidence review to make sure that they've not already been answered. And we've got an evidence review team they're currently working on that. And there's an opportunity there for anybody who's interested at the moment to take part in the evidence reviews. To get in touch with myself, and I can help get you in part of the evidence review team.
I'm glad you're not just doing that on your own. So we're looking really for people to come and help with that, to say, actually, the question that's being posed, just let's make sure we haven't already answered it, or somebody else hasn't already answered it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the steering group have had to agree a agreed threshold of what evidence they would deem appropriate enough to have answered a question. So we're really looking at, you know, systematic reviews and high quality randomized control trials and above. Some of the questions are more qualitative, so don't quite fit into that bracket, but we're currently going through the process of checking each of those, and then any unanswered questions will go forward to the next stage. And the next stage will be a survey in hopefully June time to get, again, try and get members of the public, healthcare professionals taking part and ranking their kind of top choices out of the list that's available. Hopefully we're going to try and merge a few more questions, and it should be about 50 that go to the next survey. And then after that survey, it will be narrowed down a wee bit more, and they'll go ahead to a final online workshop in September. And in September, the JLA have got such a rigorous process of trying to make sure that there's not bias creeping into the to the study. So from the steering group members, from kind of any of the processes. So they try and keep a kind of separate group of people that do the online workshop. So in September, we'll have 15 healthcare professionals and 15 kind of carers and parents that take part. So again, that's another area that we're going to be, once we've set a date, we're going to be looking for people who are interested in taking part in that process. And it will be an all-day online workshop trying to go through and decide which of these priorities should be in the top 10 list.
So basically, it's kind of the X factor for PEDS research in ED.
Yeah, so exactly. Can you get through to the next stage?
Judges' houses, and then it's the live finals.
Exactly.
Once you've got your sort of top 10 that's agreed, what happens with them next after that stage?
Yeah, so this is where the list, all of the questions that have been submitted will be open source at the end of the process. So again, to try and make sure that there's no bias and that it's free for people to review, all of those questions will be available and kind of a flow chart of how they've got to the top 10. The top 10 then list can be used by anyone. So Perugi plan to use it, but any research organisation who's interested in doing the research can do it. And it will be a matter of taking those studies and trying to design a high quality, taking those questions and designing a high quality study to answer them. And some of the questions within this kind of methodology become quite broad, and because you're asking members of the public to take part, a lot of them are in, you know, very plain English. So there may be a bit of a process at the end of taking those top 10 and making them into the more rigid medical, you know, questions in a nice PICO format. But they then can be used by researchers to go to funders and get grant funding to help those studies progress.
And I guess for those people, you know, it's a very powerful tool to be able to say, actually, look, this is what's important to our users and the people who'll put that knowledge that we get from this into action, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the success of the last research prioritization, you know, I think it's really shown that having this list helps focus the researchers and then you can come up with some really amazing studies. Like, I think the success of the last study, it was quite outstanding. And the results of it have really shaped national guidelines with how we care for children. So I think it's really exciting that the questions that people are submitting now could go on to help design amazing studies that can then really influence pediatric emergency care.
And I guess that was kind of my next follow-on question would be of the last study from 2015, of those, you know, top 10 questions, do you know how many of them got into research, and did we answer those questions?
Yeah, so I've been doing some work on it at the moment, trying to see if any of them are unanswered. At the moment, I think that there might be three that are unanswered that I'm actually going to try and see if we can include them within this study to make sure that they're not missed. But I think the other seven of the top 10 have been at least partially or completely answered. And it's really interesting going through and picking out the question and trying to track it and see what has been done. And, you know, some of the studies, like the fish study, where they did a huge, you know, feasibility trial and then realized that we just don't actually have the same numbers of children coming through presenting, you know, in such, you know, extremists that they need such vigorous resuscitation, so it wouldn't be feasible to design a long-term study because it would take years to recruit enough patients to make it statistically significant. It's quite interesting. So in those way, in you know, that question again, I've seen a lot of similar questions that came up in the first study come through again in this one. So it's interesting to see that some of those questions, although that's been answered, that it's not feasible within a research design, it's still an important question. And it's interesting to see that it's still something that people are asking today. I think I'm just double checking to make sure that there's no other work that I've missed, but I think there's potentially only three that have been unanswered from the top 10. But again, as I said, some of the questions lower down the priority list have then gone on to do amazing work as well. So with the Eclipse study, I think it was number 21, and that's, you know, that's changed our APLS handbook.
Yeah, yeah,
so it's very kind of interesting to see even ones that are ranked lower down the list. So I don't know exactly how many we'll have that go to the final workshop, but Peruki will publish the list and promote it to try and encourage the research to be done in those areas. And I think it'd be exciting to see what work comes from this in 10 years down the line.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it sounds really interesting. And for somebody like me, who's, you know, very much a non-researcher, actually, that this is really interesting. This, you know, I can see why people get sort of so excited by it. Yeah. So what are you looking for people to do? What do you want them to come and do for you and with Peruki? Yeah.
So first of all, the evidence reviews are ongoing at the moment. So if anybody is interested in taking part in those, then I'd be interested in hearing from you. At the moment, what we're doing is going against that pre-designed kind of checklist of has it met this threshold of evidence. And if there's enough data there, we're going and doing best bets. So using the best bets website to go through a structured format of this is what the evidence says, this is my appraisal of that evidence, and this is what the overall recommendation would be. And those can get picked up in multiple journals. So the Emergency Medicine Journal, the Archives of Diseases in Childhood also picks it up. I think there's two others as well. So there's a potential that they could be picked up for publication as well. So that's a nice bonus. And then you'll also get a certificate for taking part, which is great for the portfolio and ticking off those
research box, tick
boxes. So if you're interested in that, then definitely get in touch. And then the other, the next thing that everyone can do is if you see the next survey open, please take part, please share your thoughts on what are the most important next steps, and share it with family members, your children, you know, relatives. And I think the next survey should be easier to get people engaged with it, because we're not directly asking people to come up with a question, which can be quite a hard task to ask. It's more, which of these already designed questions are important to you? So publication of that and making people aware of it so that they get a chance to kind of shape the direction of future research would be amazing.
So if people go, this is definitely something I want to get involved in, you've got, I think, some QR codes, is that right? I'm sure I've seen some QR codes.
Yeah, I've made QR codes for everything I've done so far. So yes, I've got QR codes for the survey links. At the moment, it probably would be best just to contact me on my my Queen's email address, which is csloane, S-L-O-A-N-E, 04 at qub.ac.uk. And then I can help direct you with the evidence reviews and the next steps.
Perfect. And what we'll do is we'll put the addresses and the information linked to it in the show notes and on our Substack and various social media channels, so that hopefully you'll get inundated with people who need to tick that research box and want a certificate to sort of get that out. That's fantastic. So I guess the next step is, once all that's done, can you come back and tell us what the top 10 questions are going to be?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to do that. I'm excited to hear what they are myself.
Excellent. And we're sort of thinking maybe later in 2024 we might have those answers.
Yeah, so the workshop's due to take place in September. So again, if anybody's interested, we should be advertising it formally closer to the time. But if you're interested now, then we can make a note of it as well. But after that, it should be quite a swift process to release them to the public. And then we plan to publish it in a paper as well, just again to try and get the message out there.
Excellent. So we'll hopefully have you back on the show later in the year, and we can go through the top 10 of what people think is really relevant. Thank you so much, Charlotte. That's really cleared in my mind what it is, and it really does sound interesting. So yeah. Thank you and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for taking the time to download our podcast this week. If you enjoy our podcasts, please tell your friends and colleagues and subscribe to us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and of course, our SoundCloud. Thanks for listening.